If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, and I'll be your inner voice as I break down all the shows we watched together this week. No shame, no regret, just wanting all the reality we can get. Remember to check the show notes for how to find me and the rest of our chosen people. Facebook and Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And for bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And now, on with the show. Hey, welcome back. Is reality TV heating up or what? Between the new seasons of The Housewives that are airing currently and, good God, I cannot wait, the premiere of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills in the next week or two, then we have the new season of Teen Mom OG over on MTV, and the shows I want to talk about today, TLC's unexpectedly good series Unexpected and the premiere of Bravo's Top Chef Season 15. I have watched every season of Top Chef, as I know many of you have, and it's one of those shows that you never know if it's going to be as good as the previous season, and before you can even start comparing it in your mind, you're already sucked in. I feel the same way about The Amazing Race. I adore that show. But let's get into Top Chef. This season is taking place in Denver, a city I've been to. Love Denver. It's the kind of place I can live. Dave was born there. Coors Light is my favorite beer, so I'm already sold. We start with Padma, the tall, narcissistic drink of water that she is, all dressed in white, slinks in. She must have just gotten back from wardrobe, locking Gail into her cage, telling her to think twice before she orders pickled beets at lunch for the table again. And she greets the chef testants with her normal, "Welcome to Top Chef. Don't come close to me." There's always a Top Chef twist. So we find out the first challenge is a quick fire, and it's starting right now. They're going to have 45 minutes to create a potluck dish for themselves and the judges. And this dish is supposed to be a representation of their style and persona, a way to introduce themselves to the group. So then you play the game, what would you have made? I would have made my Italian sausage with peppers and onions, my homemade sauce, some store-bought rolls. Come on, what's not to love? Well, let's see what our chefs do and who they are. We have Chef Bruce, who owns a restaurant in LA. All the chefs know him, all the judges know him. And I read his bio, and it says that he specializes in homemade charcuterie. Say no more. I love a good charcuterie. I don't care if it's cheap block cheese at the grocery store, some little salami things, maybe some little nuts, a nice fruit spread and fresh bread if you're feeling fancy. Nothing will make me forget to suck in my stomach anymore than parking that stuff in front of me with a bottle of wine. I'm getting excited just thinking about it. Sounds like that's what I'm doing this evening. We get to meet Chris, who owns Butterfunk Restaurant in New York. I don't know if having the word funk in a restaurant name is a good thing. You're thinking about a food, but he does have a funky taste in food, so maybe it fits. His style is Amish soul food with a Philly grit. This sounds like a bad Rumspringa that I don't want to be a part of. We also get to meet Tanya, who I think is absolutely stunning. She has a very close shaven haircut, bold glasses that suit her personality, a huge smile, and she's from Oakland, California, where she owns Brown Sugar Cafe and does Southern soul food. Ugh, you had me right there. And she's making wings for her potluck dish. Wings, can you really go wrong? Well, I guess you can, but I'm in for Tanya. Then we get to meet Tyler, who says he's here to represent Connecticut. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just in my mind that region of the country is just over to the right and up. I linked him with Evelyn in my head. Claremont, New Hampshire, representing. He has a restaurant in Connecticut, The Cook and the Bear, that specializes in barbecue and preserving local artisan produce all winter long. So shout out to my friends in the group who taught me about pickling recently. Tyler is going to be your guy this season. We have Mustache Joe. I'm a weirdo who likes facial hair on guys, but the mustache he has is gross. I think he's using earwax to style the little curly end things. Just something's not right with it. Besides it being the cool hipster thing to do 8 to 10 years ago. You know, I don't want your mustache dandruff or your waxy follicle buildup in close proximity to my food. He just needs to walk around with one of those little mask things like they have in Asia when it's bad pollution. Sharing is not caring. Then we've got Carrie, the nervous former, maybe current Mormon who constantly looks like she doesn't want to be picked last for the volleyball tryouts. In the quick fire, she says that she's been to a lot of potlucks as a Mormon, but they would just have funeral potatoes. I bet you thought I was going to make fun of her for that. Nope, because although we don't call them funeral potatoes, we just call it potato casseroles or you bring the potatoes. We make them every Easter and it's fucking delicious. I promise you, before the 90 days, Courtney's mom makes it when she comes home from her world travels. But in case you've never had it, it is frozen hash brown potatoes. It's got to be the cubed ones. I mean, really, it's just a chemical salt lick, because to that you add cream of chicken soup right from the can. You also add onions, cheese, and then you top it all with melted butter and cornflakes and bake that shit up. Ugh, come to mama. But back to Carrie. I found this line in her Top Chef bio kind of odd. Chef Carrie hopes that her familiarity with Colorado proteins and produce will help give her a leg up in the competition. Are proteins in Colorado that much different? Like, are there different mammals roaming there that we haven't discovered yet? Now we have Joe from Chicago. He said he knows how to make an Italian beef sandwich, and then they show him in a photo with a huge cold sub sandwich with lettuce on it. That's not an Italian beef. For the record, Portillo's will always dominate in an Italian beef competition. We meet T.U. He's kind of cute, a nice guy who we will learn more about later. And then we meet Hot Mess Melissa. I feel bad for her, as she is clearly the underdog and she knows it. She's never competed in anything and she's already worried about her potatoes. I was worried about her headband that was creeping further and further back on her head the whole day. In saunters a very bored Padma with a 5 minutes left, and she's followed by Tom, who looks absolutely exhausted and bored from carrying that chip on his shoulder and his Napoleon complex all day. And new to the scene this year, we have Graham Elliott, who I've never actually seen cook or talk or anything, because I can't take any of him. Just pick a thing. You can't have everything as a statement piece. He's got the glasses, the patterned shirt, the weird fitting pants with the belt, and then the hair. It's just a quarter inch shy of looking like Brother Chantel River. And then, of course, my queen, Gail, who is always dressed like Padma's great aunt, but she's got a heart of gold. Time's up, utensils down. They sit down to eat, Padma next to Tom, and we learn that one of the chef testant's names is Brother Luck. Thank God he wasn't ugly, because that could have been really horrible as nicknames and jokes as a kid. Brother Luck, the big fat truck. Brother Luck, your mother sucks. I better stop, because if he has a son, he might need to be named Brother Junior, and that could get even uglier. Well, they're eating and complimenting one another's food, and then Padma says, "Well, you are going to be the judges for this quick fire." They hand out cards to everyone, and they have to list their favorite and least favorite. So Melissa and Carrie end up on the bottom. Mustache Joe, Joe and Two are on top. And Tom admits he's a sucker for a wild mushroom. This is why I cannot stand Tom. What the fuck does that even mean? There's no wit in it. He just thinks if he cocks his head to the side and leans his head back to expose his double chin and talks out of the side of his mouth, it's funny. Is anyone else annoyed by him? Well, in the end, Two wins with his corn, okay, and he wins immunity. Padma takes Gail's ball gag out of her mouth so Gail can tell us that back in the frontier days, Denver was known as a meat and potatoes town, but there's been a renaissance in the past few years, and chefs are taking food to a new level. As if Colorado natives had just been eating pot roast exclusively until last year. So the challenge is modern twist on meat and potatoes served to 200 people in Larimer Square. For this one, I think I would probably just order a bunch of Chipotle burrito bowls and serve it up. We meet Fatima, who grew up looking up to Padma. She's in the car telling us that she watched her as a young girl, wanted to meet her, and I love that that's really just passively, aggressively shading Padma for being old. And then we meet Alaska native Laura, who talks a lot about Alaska. She doesn't know the layout of Whole Foods, so this is going to be extra challenging for her. It's a grocery store, sweetheart. This isn't Double Dare. I always enjoy a meat counter confrontation, which we were not treated to just yet. We all know there's going to be one. Historically, it's been over, between like scallops and Kobe beef. And it's always fun to play the predictions with yourself as you're watching. Because once you get the lay of the land, you learn how producers get you really invested in that one person during the first half of the episode. And 9 times out of 10, they are the people who are talking to their kids on the phone and crying. And then they end up sous-viding something for the first time and they're eliminated. Or we learn that they had a learning disability as a kid and their parents were poor immigrants. And it's either that person's going to lose or they're going to start pissing people off. And sure enough, there's only minutes left once they're back shopping and cooking that Bruce looks like he's going to die. Two ends up finishing his dish early, so he starts lending him a hand. Bruce is appreciative. But there's little whispers and foreshadowing of other chefs noticing and resenting that. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. I think Bruce is going to be the black sheep pretty soon. He's going to, put a target on himself. Now the fun part where we get to see the house. It's like the moment of the Real World. It's a beautiful house, the bones of it at least, but I wouldn't describe it as MTV Cribs, as Chris said. If there are bunk beds from IKEA, the My Doll model, which sells for $169, I'm not going to be able to say this is where the magic happens. The only magic that will be happening is the miracle you'll need pulling someone out alive after a grown man tipping the scales at an easy 300 plus pounds comes crashing down from that top bunk in the middle of the night. Fast forward to the next day, they're at Larimer Square. Bruce is worried about his gnocchi being ready on time because he ran on time prepping yesterday. And we get to know Two a little better. He kindly gives up his pot to, I think it was Joe, and he likes to be the one to make friends, establish camaraderie. So he lends his pan to him, or lends his pot to him rather, and he puts his pan over an induction oven. Again, we know well enough that this is going to be a storyline. Now the judges have shown up, as well as a swarm of people. And you get the feeling like when you throw a party or you're hosting a holiday and you're all set to go. You've cleaned, you've prepped, and then you see the cars pull up and it's a mix of, oh, shit, why did I do this? And, okay, let's do this. Let's get it done. Wine me. Let's do it. So first up, Padma. See, now I'm calling her Padma like a douchebag. Padma and Tom at Fatima's tent. She did a little take on a samosa. Padma loves it, says it's like a Pakistani nacho, and it has an Indian umami. You know what's so annoying about Padma? She always tries to make it sound like she knows more about the cuisine or the spice or the protein, more about it than the chefs themselves who made it did. Let's see Padma get her ass out there, because I know she's a foodie, she's had cookbooks and that kind of stuff, but there's no way she could do what these chefs do every season. Two's Vietnamese beef stew had a pretty mild review from Gail, who told him it was good, but it was a little bitter from the pan. I call BS on that one. I think this is an instance where the producers stir things up, tell the judges a little something or to ask something. And now we get to Creepy Mustache Joe, and he's got some sort of tartar with seaweed powder. And Padma wants Joe and Tom to know how fuckable she still is. So she says coyly, should I put it in all at once? This is so thirsty, Evelyn, to me. And then Tom says, go ahead, Padma. All right. Now, allegedly, I tried finding this blind item that I know was published a year or two ago, and it had pretty solid evidence of these two having a little thing together. It was pretty convincing because there was something about Tom's wife finding out that they were having rendezvous on location, and she insists that they not stay on the same property anymore. Allegedly, I tried digging and finding it. Maybe if I have some more time this weekend, I'll find it and post it. So all of that kind of makes sense with these little double entendres, like the, I hate warm, slimy meat. Oh, Tom. Ugh. All right. Now, all the judges adored Bruce's roasted potato gnocchi. How could you not? However, Carrie's short rib and goat cheese was a bust because she served it with a burnt chip. And girl, Tom does not appreciate a burnt chip. I think it was Brother Luck who served something that looked like a kindergartner threw up after a purple popsicle. Another chef, Rogelio, made a potato croquette, which Tom was surprised he actually pulled off and he enjoyed it, even though Tom basically emotionally destroyed Rogelio yesterday when he told him his game plan. Tom is one sick little puppy when he does that stuff. One sick LP. Oh my God, LP. Oh, and he's short. Oh, it fits him. Oh, little tiny Tom, LP. All right, well, there's a few more chefs and dishes. They all got some good reviews and compliments. Alaska Laura's flank steak needed a base, according to Stupid Graham. And then Padma spots her prey, the weak spot, the new shy girl on the playground, Melissa. And she goes over and says, well, these potatoes aren't undercooked at least. Thank you. And without even fully turning around, Padma says, I didn't like that. She is one ballsy bitch. Padma was in full Padmamonium when she gets to Adrian. She's like Mother Gothel in Rapunzel, where she just crushing people's reputations and ruining their chef careers. It gives her the dewy skin, the tighter facial skin, like a facelift, slims her down and makes her tongue just as sharp as one of their knives. And she takes one bite of Adrian's sweet potatoes and says, to me, it's too sweet. Thank you. Oh my God, that's cold. So the judges reconvene. They go over their favorites and least favorites and head back to judges' table. Their favorites are Tyler, Chris, and Fatima. I love how Padma says Fatima with an accent. It's like the Rachel Real World and Andre effect. Graham Elliott, I hate your face. I swear there's no actual glasses in those eye frames. And I also noticed Gail must have gotten some bad Botox because she had a droopy lid. If you look at her right lid, looking at her left lid. Okay, well, now we get to where Tom gets to tell us who won, and when he gets giddy, and he's like, oh, I get to do this. And Tyler wins. Yay, who cares, because we don't really know you yet. Now we get to our least favorite, Adrian, Melissa, and Carrie. And two, it's good you had immunity. Classic Top Chef move. And then another classic Padma line. Did you want your dish to be that sweet? Damn. Do you think she talks to her daughter Krishna like that? Did you mean to draw this picture of mommy that looks like shit? Did you want your painting from art class to look like it was done on accident? Okay, moving on. They tell rookie Melissa that her fennel was good, but her pork was dry. And Gail went in hard, basically saying that she has no fucking clue how to cook. She doesn't know why she chose that protein or why she cut it that way, cooked it that way, served it that way. Carrie got some heat for her dish because they thought she was a little heavy-handed. And Carrie admits that she might have got a little excited with the goat cheese. That would have shot her to first place in my book, especially an expensive Whole Foods goat cheese. If you're mortgaging your house for a tub of cheese, you best be licking that plate clean. So I predicted Melissa to be eliminated, and drumroll, Padma smirking. I swear you see her smirking, side of her mouth curling up into a smile. Melissa, please pack your knives and go. Melissa is holding back tears. Felt bad for her. That sucks. Her headband is still halfway off the back of her head. And as if it isn't bad enough, they have her wait in the back room for Tom to come in to tell her how Last Chance Kitchen is now going to be even harder. So good luck. And then we see her go in the back. We see Uggs McGee himself, Marcel, on it. So immediately count me out. I will not be watching it. And the previews of this season show Richard fucking Blaze. I will need to be highly intoxicated to watch that one. His mouth scares me. It's like a wide, gaping, black hole of elasticy cheeks. And I just picture like falling into a volcano on Lord of the Rings and creatures living in there with red eyes. Whoa. Okay. So Richard Blaze aside, I think it's going to be a pretty good season. Okay, so last night at midnight, I was finally able to watch the latest episode of Unexpected. Stupid TLC locks those episodes, and it's not in my DirecTV Now package, but I gotta tell you, it was worth the late night because, damn, the show sucks you in. Let's start with Lily. TLC loves a good old mom folding the laundry scene, don't they? We saw it with Evelyn and Jekyllin on 90 Day Fiancé, and now we see Mother Kim come in with sheets and towels. Help me fold. Lily takes a break from playing the endless loops of Blue's Clues cartoons in her head, and she settles in for a little chat with her mom. Kim has some concerns about James. She doesn't want to force her view of James onto Lily, but she wants Lily to see the other side of things, aka reality. I have some concerns about Kim's health because there's clearly something off about her jawline and her coloring, and I'm not making fun of this, as I actually really like and respect Kim. I just hope she's healthy and she's okay. It's just the elephant in the room, right? Okay, well, what we get around to is that Kim is worried that Lily is going to give the baby James's last name. No one really knows him well enough, and they haven't even been together for a year, so I get that. I mean, are they really even together? I mean, I know they are, but is it just because of the baby? I don't think either of them really understands it's an actual human baby growing in there. Per usual, Lily is just glazed over. And finally, Kim voices what we're all thinking. You're not getting it. And I think she means by like, you're not getting it, she means you're not getting how life works. And I'm going to be totally honest and say I 100% agree with Kim. The baby's last name should be Bennett, which is their last name, until they're married. Not necessarily because I'm traditional, but I think it will just make it easier legally and emotionally. I've invested 9 years of my life to Teen Mom, so I'm pretty much a practicing family law attorney. And as a matter of fact, between the three of us, we could probably open up our own firm and just take this thing nationwide. So I gotta give it to my girl Kim, who is keeping her cool no matter what. She's calmly explaining that they're just young, the relationship is young, and even from her own experience with Lily's dad, these young guys are going to tell you all kinds of stories, and you don't know if they're actually going to stick around or not. And then Lily says it. I'm married in my head. Oh, honey, this isn't Barbie in the Dream House. And even though she is married to him in her head, James certainly isn't married to her in his head. And Kim sees that James is just not that into Lily, but she doesn't want to break her poor little daughter's heart. So she just ends up telling her, just be prepared for anything to happen. Optimistic little Lily doesn't think James would ever leave her because he's not that type of person. He's there every time she plays a tough game of peekaboo with him. How's he do that? He disappears when I cover my eyes and then he's there again. All Kim can do, short of doing a Kevin Nealon Mr. Subliminal skit, remember that from SNL? Youngsters, look it up. Is she can just strongly hint that Lily needs to tell James, get this, it's a wild idea, how she feels so he knows how she feels. Ugh, I mean, can you imagine a conversation between Lily and Nicole from 90 Day Fiancé? Just brain synapses firing at negative speed. Well, now we get to the part of the show that required the most research for me. The rainbow cookie ice cream. I'm guessing this is an East Coast or New York thing because I've never even heard of a rainbow cookie, and the way she described it, cookie, then a rainbow, and then a cookie. What? So naturally, an easy little stalker search told me that they went to the Ice Cream Cottage in Mastic, New York. And further research told me that a rainbow cookie is layers of almond cake. Each layer is yellow, red, or green, and there's jam in between each one, and then it's covered with chocolate. So I'm thinking it's actually more like a petit four than a cookie. Whatever it is, it had me at almond cake and jam. So the two sit down eating their ice cream and they're talking about what they're going to name the baby. And they've decided on Aaliyah Rose. Oh boy. So instantly I thought of Leontine Mom naming all her three girls basically the same name, kind of like the Duggars. And then they started talking about the spelling, extra A's and H's or no H. And my brain was swimming, much like Lily's brain probably does 24/7. And I thought the spelling would be like the teen mom way, A-L-E-E-A-H. But it's like the singer who died in the plane crash way, Aaliyah. As Missy Misdemeanor Elliott said at the 2001 MTV Music Awards, "This performance of Get Your Freak On is dedicated to Aaliyah. Rest in peace, baby girl." I kid you not, that actually happened. I was in college at the time, and I burst into laughter so loud, this is not a joke. My roommate thought someone was breaking into our apartment, and I was tie-bowing my way to freedom. Okay, so back and forth with the baby's name, who cares? Spoiler alert, fast forward 15 seconds if you don't want to know. The baby gets the last name Kennedy. I found out when I was trying to figure out how to spell Aaliyah. Well, James is in the moment, and he knows Lily won't buy him ice cream again at the ice cream cottage unless he gives her a gift. So he takes out the ring box with a big old ugly sterling silver costume jewelry CZ ring in it, and she just puts it on her finger. TLC does cringeworthy TV so well. Lily just assumes it's a promise ring or an engagement ring, and I don't think any of us really knew what it was, and neither does James. So she asks him, "Oh, does this mean we're going to get married?" And he just about gets diarrhea from all that dairy he just ate and the thought of having to explain to Lily how light switches and stairs work well into their gray old age together. So he just mutters, "Eventually," which to him means never and to her means 6 months. Now that couch time with James and his mom was really fun to watch because even she is like, "You dumbass, if you give a woman a ring, she's gonna think it's a promise ring or an engagement ring." James and Jesse Von Trapp need to share some bro time together because they both did the exact same thing. Here's a ring because you wanted one, now go shut your face. I agree with James's mom that he shouldn't ever feel pressure to marry someone just because, and James agrees, but he's such a moron. Because he thinks getting engaged is a big decision because you have to plan a lot and they're so expensive. Well, that's the most serious thing and the thing he's most concerned about. But, you know, what about the baby? That's not a big decision. What you're going to be doing with your life because of the baby? That's a lot of planning. I'm predicting James is out of there pretty early on. Poor Kim. All right, let's talk about Michaela. We had that conversation last week between Michaela's mom, Shannon, and Kaylin's mom, Shelly. Clearly, Shelly was just pissed off after that and didn't want to film for a bit because she was totally MIA. And by the way, did any of you see the Joan Cusack mouth resemblance? It's there. All right, now what got me pissed off at Grandma Cindy and Grandpa Tiny Tim was that they said what Shannon did 8 to 10 years ago is history. What she's doing today is what counts. Yeah, exactly. And what she's doing today is being a selfish bitch. Just because she's sober doesn't mean she's a saint. Maybe they're jaded because they're seeing her in comparison to her old self when she was a mega bitch. But there's still a sliding scale on the bitch spectrum, you know? And I think she's still well into the 80th percentile. Well, because of all this, Kaylin isn't coming over because he's feeling uncomfortable. They don't like his mom, Shelly, now. I can see that. And it would be hard for me to send my teenage son over to someone's house if they clearly did not like me. And on that note, I should probably start preparing myself for that because there are bound to be people who are not going to like me after they hear some things I say. Now, even though they're upset with Shelly, they like Kaylin and they think he's a good kid who's trying. I wouldn't say I love Kaylin, But he is by far the best out of these dads. He's like the Corey from Teen Mom of this group. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He has a conscience and he's empathetic, but he's also smart enough to know how to navigate through and around these adults. I almost think he's too good for Michaela, and he puts up with a lot of her immature stuff. That would be hard as a parent to watch your son put up with that. I don't like that now Shannon is getting her own segments. I'm watching Unexpected for the teen mom drama stuff, not Shannon. We see her birth story where she gives birth to a toddler. Her karma would have been to deliver that 9-pound, 10-ounce baby vaginally. But maybe her karma is more long-term. Like for the next year, year and a half, she's going to be having to carry around that car seat with that little chunker. Now, I know I wrote this down last week, but damn, Tiny Tim is a rough-looking 57. Someone's got to give him some SPF and some retinol stat. Now, he's already getting nervous about this baby, as no one else seems to be. He wants to retire soon, and he's not looking forward to raising more kids. But then Michaela butts in. She's like, I'll raise her. Yeah, sure. With your 10 speed and your half-filled piggy bank, who do you think paid for your bunk bed or your toothpaste this morning, Michaela? Well, in an attempt to spend as much time with her mom and her little sister and new baby sister before her own baby arrives, Michaela's staying at Shannon's for a week or two. I think this is the worst idea ever. She should be staying as far away from newborns as possible before she gives birth. Enjoy the quiet, the lack of baby shit everywhere, because you will not see an empty corner of your house for the next 3 to 5 years minimum, and you're never, ever going to sleep soundly ever again as you did pre-baby. Now, surprisingly, Kaylin goes over to Shannon's to practice on baby Lillian, the new baby. Kaylin doesn't think it's going to be all that hard to take care of the baby. Oh, the optimism, the stupidity, the oversized foot he's stuffing into his mouth. He's going to look back and hate himself. Now, can I ask two questions? Number one, why are all of these couch shots shot at such weird angles? Because the people are either like scooted up way to the front of the couch, backs propped up with cushions, or they're about to give the boys a testicle exam. I shouldn't know that a 16-year-old Kaylin wears right. I'm already on some FBI list for Googling trying to find out what the code words for sex trafficking in Thailand are, and now I'm going to have boy balls all over my TV screen. This isn't going to bode well for me. And number two, why does Kaylin look so different in every scene? He's got different hair and hats and all that, yes. However, it's like the angles of his face change. It's like a morphization thing going on. And while I want to be optimistic for these two, I'm not, because I much prefer Kaylin to Michaela. She just screams needy and spoiled. And Kaylin is right that Michaela doesn't give him credit. He's pulled his shit together for a 16-year-old. He's got a job, a license, a bank account. But even with that, she thinks he's too much with his friends. I have a feeling she's the kind of girl that kind of dumps their friends off to the side when she gets a boyfriend. So she probably lost them all. She doesn't have any of her own. He's already feeling trapped by this. You can just get a sense of it. And she's pissed off about something, which he is grasping at straws to figure out. And then she says, it's just that this is the last few weeks I can be with you without the baby. And I was really proud of Kaylin for being direct and calling her out on it, that she should have just said it. Never once has she brought that up to him. Good for you, Kaylin. Make her rise to the occasion too and contribute to the relationship and work at it as hard as you are. I am Team Kaylin. All right, here we go. Lexis. Do you think Kelsey regrets naming her Lexis? I mean, after a car, I bet we're going to have a slew of baby Teslas in the years to come. Now, Lexus is the only one of the girls who has had their baby, and she's still in the hospital with Scarlett. They're all loving on her, but Shaden thinks Scarlett is 9 months old. He's bouncing her around, throwing balls at her face because, duh, how's she going to learn to catch otherwise? And Lexus says she can't explain seeing him with Scarlett. And I swear to you, I said aloud, me neither, because immediately I had concerns with how he was manhandling that baby. It's like Nicole with powdered donuts. Just gentle, soft touch, nice. And again, we get Shaden's balls thrown in our face. And I think he might have a sensory issue because he's never without mesh clothing head to toe all the time. Lexus already thinks this parenting thing is tough, and she hasn't even left the hospital yet. And she says, I just hope being a new mom gets easier than this. I considered my hospital stay after having kids like a mini vacation. Room service, hello, my own bathroom, someone coming to check on me, didn't have to do laundry, didn't have to take out the garbage. Damn it. I think every mom should get a hospital stay every year, even if you haven't had a baby. Now my BFF, Kelsey, says that she's still stunned that she's barely out of her 20s and she's a grandma. But she's being positive and a loving grandma at that, because she says that Scarlett is a precious gift to the family. And you know what? Lexus really lucked out with getting Kelsey for a mom. It appears that Shaden is going to spend the first few days to a week at Kelsey's house. And although she doesn't enjoy him, who does? It doesn't even look like his own mom does, because where is she? Shaden is showing the potential for change. He even got a full-time job. So she's giving credit where credit's due. Now, even beyond the bouncing, Shaden is talking to the baby way too much. Like, I think he really thinks Scarlett can understand and comprehend the English language at this point. And the things he says, it's like he's establishing dominance with Scarlett, like letting her know who's boss here. And clearly Shaden has issues with control, because he has the gall to say, Kelsey's not too happy about me moving in, but I don't like having less power than one parent. Meaning that Lexus will kind of be the boss or the main parent if he's not living in the house. I hate to break it to you, Shaden, but most of the time, I'm not saying always, but most of the time, the responsibility will fall squarely on a mom's shoulders. Even if you're great parents and you work together, there's always that assumed stuff a mom takes on. At least at the very beginning, in those early days, in feeding, you're breastfeeding, or I mean, it's just because nature set it up that way, okay? Even if you're bottle feeding. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I'd say most of the time, in my experience, as I know it, not all the time, the default parent is the mom. She holds all the real power, which is the nurturing. She's also got the calendar. She always knows where the nearest bathroom is, and we always got the snacks in her bags, okay? It's just how life works. So now we're 6 days in, and Lexus is home alone with Scarlett for the first time. She's bored, she hasn't showered, and she thinks she's learned a secret us moms don't tell anyone, that we all just sit around bored all day. Girl, that baby is only 6 days old. That's nature's way of giving you a week to adjust and heal. That baby is not just going to be eating and pooping and sleeping for very long. In just a matter of days, you will be begging her to sleep. You're going to be drowning yourself in white noise, in the darkness, swaddle me's, wishing for a boring moment. I just wanted to reach through the screen and put my finger over her mouth. Just shh, shh, silence, shh, 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 hush now. And she also said, oh, she feels like she's a prisoner to the house. Well, welcome to the chain gang, ladies, fresh meat. So meanwhile, Shaden thinks that he is Dr. Spock, Harvey Karp, shout out happiest baby on the block, know it by heart, because that shit works. And he thinks he's good with babies and can get them to calm down. And he disses Lexus that, oh, she's just going to get better at it with practice. Such a fucking asshole. I would have punched him in one of his painful zits, like an underground one right by his nose, because those little bitches hurt. You can't see them, but they're there. I mean, at motherfucking 12 days old, Shaden is deciding that he's going to teach Scarlett how to self-soothe and he's going to Ferberize her all at the same time. And by the way, Ferberizing, for those of you who don't know, is sleep training. So Scarlett is just too damn dependent on that pacifier and he's going to tell Lexus to throw it away. My body heat then and even now is rising as I was watching this. I was just clenching my jaw. My chest felt like I was flushing red. For such an expert, he should know that babies suck to soothe themselves as an instinct and a reflex to keep themselves alive. And what kills me is that he tells Lexus to put socks on her hands. So if you want her to soothe herself, how do you expect her to do that if she can't find her hands to curl up by her face or to suck on? I mean, I understand maybe she was scratching herself with her little fingernails, but then give her the pacifier or try feeding her. Or maybe, like, you fed her an hour ago, but maybe she's hungry again. It's just new parent 101. There's no schedule. The only constant is change. How Kelsey didn't beat the shit out of him while that little newborn was screaming herself to exhaustion is beyond me. She yells at him, which I think she should have, but Shaden says that all 25 moms he's talked to says to let him cry. Well, you know what? Every mom I know and all of us say, check the baby's diaper, swaddle her up tight. Dave and I used to say, like, okay, let's swaddle the shit out of him. See if she's hungry. Turn that white noise up to max. Sway that baby to sleep. I mean, still to this day, you know how you tell if someone's a mom? You see them swaying at all times. Standing in line at the grocery store, swaying. Looking out a window somewhere, swaying. I mean, the second I pick up a baby, my hips don't lie. I get that whole figure eights thing going. So at this point, both Shaden and Lexus are just looking at their screaming, miserable newborn daughter on the bed. It was heartbreaking. Like, how physically can you sit there and watch that? I'm getting worked up myself thinking about it. It's not even my kid. So finally, Shaden picks her up and she stops screaming and she's just kind of whimpering. And he goes, look at that. You're still alive. Yeah, she stopped crying because you picked her up. She needed physical touch and reassurance. And she's now exhausted and hungry from all of that. And Kelsey is just beyond. She's pissed at Lexus for not standing up to him. And I don't actually feel bad for Lexus when she says she feels stuck in the middle. Because you know what, honey? Easy solution. Get your lazy piece of crap boyfriend out of your mom's house. He shouldn't be there anyway. And also, you picked him. So in the last minute, poor Kelsey is looking at her cute little dog, envious of the dog's life, that the dog's got it so easy now. And she says, try dealing with a 17-year-old punk, treating your daughter and granddaughter that way. Kelsey, we are here for you. That wraps up today's episode. I will be back on Monday with 90 Day Fiancé. I'm so excited to have opened up the Patreon bonus episodes to more people. I know there's been a little bit of confusion, misunderstanding what that email Patreon sent to everyone the other day was. I got one too, as I'm a patron of some other podcasts. Creators like myself had no idea Patreon was changing their fee structure, which actually ended up being good timing with me lowering the monthly pledge amount and going monthly, because basically this is what it means. Before, creators would be charged all of the processing fees and we would get Patreon's cut also deducted. And now they're splitting that fee with you, the patrons. So if you're pledging $5 a month, I did the math, you will see a charge of $5.50. It will not be any more than that. Many creators like myself are reaching out to Patreon, working to see if there's a way that we can pay that extra 50 cents ourselves so that it's not charged to you. So I will keep you updated on that. Remember to check out all the social media links in the show notes. Those bonus episodes are on patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And I wish you all an amazing weekend. I will talk to you on Monday. Stay sweet, stay salty.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.